More grim news out of Syria over the weekend. The death toll continues to climb. This weekend, Syrian opposition activists accused President Bashar al-Assad's army of mass executions in the town of Daraya, a suburb of Damascus. Videos uploaded online show a grave filled with children's bodies and a basement full of corpses. This latest atrocity would be the worst single attack in what's been a long battle between Assad and opposition forces to control key cities like Aleppo and Damascus. Joining us is Joshua Landis, director of the Center for Middle Eastern Studies at the University of Oklahoma, author of Syria Comment. Also covering the story for our partner, the BBC, is John Line. John is in Cairo. John, what is the threshold of outrage in Egypt in the coverage you're seeing and in the news you're getting of these reports of atrocities from Daraya?
Well, certainly we haven't heard much from the Egyptian government yet, but I mean, the British government is saying, if confirmed, this would be the worst single atrocity since the uprising began in Syria last year, and have called for an international condemnation. It certainly seems to take things up a step. Of course, it's very, very difficult to confirm the details. We've seen sometimes before where we've seen pictures of lots of bodies, we've heard reports of killings, but we're not clear of the circumstances. And in this case, we certainly know that there's been a lot of fighting going on in that area. There still is today in suburbs of Damascus. And it's not clear who's been killed in fighting between the government and rebels and who've been cold-bloodedly executed, as, of course, the opposition is claiming in this case.
At the same time, it seems as though Mohamed Morsi, the president of Egypt, is attempting, at least according to the New York Times, to reach out to Iran to try to be a regional broker in bringing some sort of peace to Syria. Turkey has attempted to do the same sort of thing. What information do you have on Mohamed Morsi's impetus to do something like this and possible credibility?
Well, President Morsi is going to be in Tehran, actually, albeit briefly, for this non-aligned summit. I think, frankly, Washington would be very nervous to hearing about this, sort of thinking maybe the new Islamist powers are ganging up and developing a new foreign policy. But actually, it's very hard to see what common interest Tehran and Cairo have in this. President Morsi has been very strong in speaking out in favour of the opposition, who are, of course, mostly Sunni Muslims, whereas, by contrast, Tehran has been very strong in supporting the Syrian government. So it's very hard to see really what's going to come of this. It's certainly an attempt, though, by President Morsi to reassert Egypt and frankly, to develop a foreign policy, which this country hasn't had for quite a while.
Does the unrest in Syria present a regional challenge for Egypt, or is it more symbolic at this point?
It presents a huge challenge to the region, absolutely. And the Arab League, to be fair, has at least been speaking out very loudly and has been getting involved, of course, in the mediation efforts. Does it present a security challenge to Egypt? Well, I don't know. Difficult to say, really. Not immediately, clearly. But I think what we're certainly seeing is the Arab Spring, if you want to call it that, echoing around. And so nothing that happens in any one country in this region happens in isolation.
Indeed. John Line from our partner, the BBC, John Line in Cairo. Thanks so much, John. Also joining us, Joshua Landis, director of the Center for Middle East Studies at the University of Oklahoma. Give us a sense of where these latest developments bring us. Is it a continuation, or have we gone up a notch, as John Line suggests?
Well, we've definitely gone up a notch, and this is a bad sign for the future. And I think it augurs lets us know that there's a very dark future in Syria, and there's still a long way for escalation. Damascus is key, is so important for the Assad regime. If they get pushed out of Damascus, which is, after all, a Sunni city, it's hard to imagine how this army is going to be able to keep control of Damascus. What we're seeing in Syria is increasingly the Syrian army is becoming an Alawite militia. And the Sunnis are defecting out of the army. And Damascus and Aleppo both are coming alive with opposition. Opposition are penetrating and swimming in them like a sea. But there are many other elements of the population. There are upper class people who don't want to be turned into a battlefield. There are minorities living there that are frightened of Islamic fundamentalists. So Syria is fragmented right now, and it looks like the local population is going to be caught in between these growing forces. The government that is desperate, increasingly desperate, and the opposition, which is getting more and more arms, more and more militias, and in some ways, more fragmented as time goes on.
What does this look like, though, in terms of historical precedent? Is this Rwanda or is this a Balkans where you're going to have Srebrenica after Srebrenica? And
well, this is Lebanon, I think. You know, we have two models in the neighborhood. We have Iraq, where America helped destroy the Ba'athist regime and sent all the Ba'athists back into the countryside, helped the Shiites, who had been downtrodden, come to the top of society, and threw the Sunnis, 20% of Iraqis, down to the very bottom. Then you have that model is the way many people think about what's going to happen in Syria, that the rebels, the majority Sunni population, are going to defeat this government, which is run by a security system of Alawites. Now, that's the model they have in their minds, but it's not.
No, let's just point out many of those rebels possibly fought in Iraq. So that model is in their mind for a good reason.
It is, but it's also there is no America here that's going to sweep in, destroy, and help build unity amongst the opposition. What we probably have is a Lebanon model, which is the country falls apart along ethnic sectarian lines, and there's battling for a long time. Now, if Assad is thinking about saving his top generals, his regime is perhaps too glorified a word, but his military has everything. He is going to fight on. He's going to find a way to fall back on Alawite territories. Even if he can't create a state in the Alawite region, he can continue to be the biggest militia with support from Iran, Russia, other places, keep on getting arms, and fight the rest of Syria to a standstill. And that can happen only if the opposition never unifies. And that's the reason that he handed off the northeast to the Kurds. He's been arming Kurds, other tribal elements. He's been trying to fragment Syria the way Lebanon was. And then nobody can become a winner. And in Lebanon, 15 years later, the various warlords had to shake hands. And now they're all respected members of parliament.
And the long time that you refer to there, 15 years, is what it took the Lebanon carnage to end and become roughly the very tentative political stability that exists now in Lebanon. Joshua Landis, thanks so much.
Pleasure.
Josh Landis is director of the Center for Middle East Studies at the University of Oklahoma, author of the blog Syria Comment.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.